Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and yes, we are all about jobs in the music industry. We are all about careers in music, and we're all about talking to the movers and shakers and innovators in music today, just getting their stories, their wisdom, their experience, basically asking them, how the hell did you get your job? What did you do to get your job? What did you do to get to where you are today as an artist, an entrepreneur, a marketer, any aspect of the music industry? We got all the information right here. We are on all the streaming platforms. We are on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Android, and more. We're also on musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. Last week, I had a wonderful guest, Travis Holcomb. He is a KCRW radio DJ. He hosts a great radio show between 10 p.m. and midnight. You can catch it on the KCRW.com website. If you're in LA, it's 89.9. So he talked about his career trajectory, starting out in Georgia and coming out to LA, and his career as it keeps evolving and exploding as a radio DJ, and also an independent radio DJ, which is hard to find these days. So again, just dropping a lot of knowledge and a lot of cool stuff about radio and independent radio and how to get discovered also as an artist. Get your music heard by these DJs. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that podcast, go on back and listen to it. And it was our 20th episode. So check it out. My next guests, that's right, this week we have two phenomenal guests, Tribeca and Grand Agent. They make up the rap group Tribeca Grand. Tribeca is an MC, producer, songwriter, and author hailing from the Bronx. He's worked with KRS-One and Camp Lo, to name a few. And Grand Agent is from Philly. He's a hip-hop artist who has worked with Pete Rock and Common, to name a few. And as Tribeca Grand, their singles have completely torn up National College Rap Radio Chart, and they've also been featured on East Coast commercial radio like New York's Hot 97. So I just got the official word that their debut album, Sport of the Gods, will be released this month on April 17th. So you heard it here first. Let's take a listen to their hit single, NYPHI. Here it is.
We be the rap, what key be the lock? Tribeca Grand, what hit me in the heart? You rode the bench while we played the block. Shaq in the paint, Kobe, you cannot stop. Three-peat, repeat, we eat beats easily. Recently been cooking up the L, spitting greasily. Seems to be so many critics with it living leisurely. Judging while we work, that shit's berserk. I'll be the Bronx, Grand Agent, he be the Philly. Yankee fitted on, but them Eagles is riding with me. Statue of Liberty, Liberty Bell. Play the sport of the gods forever, we give them hell. Oh well.
I am very, very privileged to introduce to y'all Grand Agent and Tribeca of Tribeca Grand. Welcome, guys, to Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Hey, how you doing?
Nice.
Thanks for having us.
Love it. All right, let's go back to childhood. You guys ready?
Okay.
All right, let's start with Tribeca. Tell me about your childhood as it related to music. How do you remember first being introduced to music? Was it in your household? That kind of thing.
My household is, my family is from Antigua, an island in the West Indies, Caribbean. Mm-hmm. So, ironically, I'm actually the only person born in the United States from my family. So, at that point, it was really a lot of calypso. I really didn't get into hip hop till like I remember doing the butt.
Mm-hmm.
I remember like my sisters like having the 12-inch, and that's my first introduction to something of that tempo. Everything else was kind of like, you know, carnival type sounding. So I came real late, like when Pump It Up is showing on. I believe it was like Channel 5 or the Fox Network called Pump It Up, and I was introduced to like Gangsta Just to Get a Rep, and mm-hmm. I was sold. That was my real, like, okay, I like this. I'm going to, let's see if I could actually get into this type of thing. And from there, it was just a neighborhood thing, just messing around with friends and the interest that they had in music. And it led me further on into a career.
Nice. And anyone in your family that's, you know, also pursuing music, or that, you know, parents or grandparents that pursue music?
Not that I know of. No one. Everybody. It was when I signed my first deal, everybody was kind of, it was kind of a first for everyone in a nutshell. So I'm figuring I'm the foundation breaker.
Nice. That's amazing. That's amazing. And I have to say that's actually unusual. The majority of my guests have a music, you know, parent, relatives, you know, right. So that's really interesting. Okay, Grand Agent, tell us about you.
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Let me see. My earliest memories, there used to be a, maybe the Muppets or Sesame Street or somebody did a, like a parody on this Saturday Night Fever album. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that, like Grover had the white suit on. And so I remember having that record, and I remember having my own little record player off to the side. I remember gradually kind of getting into my mother's records, which probably would have been some Motown stuff like that. I just remember one day listening to this this Grover Saturday Night Fever record and looking at the record like, where the hell are the people? Like, where is this? How is this working? You know, and I used to like, are there little people inside the center of the record? Like, it was just like, it was crazy. So that's my first memory. And it was all up until probably until about fifth grade. It was mostly about records. And I did have a little drum kit as a kid too, and I remember pounding on that. So a few things happened all at once. You know, I joined a band at school, like a marching band kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I played the drums, and I had a very ill drum teacher, and so I kind of went with that for a while. But at the same time, I started like saving my little money and buying Run DMC 12 inches, and so it kind of was a few things coming together, you know, at once. Like I always was just fascinated with records. When I joined the band, I kind of started to, I guess, make the connection between making music and what's coming off of the record somehow, if that makes sense. Always, and I think I still look at them as two separate things. Like I look at a record like a platform, and I look at music like maybe an art form, you know? I don't know if that makes sense. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. I think it basically means, you know, it's like the medium versus the muse, right? Like,
right.
Music is kind of this like magical, ethereal, and then there's like physical product, but you and I both know like that particular take of that particular song or track is just, it's like just a part of history or something, right? It's like it's one and done. It's just, it's going to sound different every time live. Tribeca, tell me about school. Was it something that you, did you start to formulate a plan? Did you feel like you needed to pursue an education in that, or like, just talk to me a little bit about sort of the early days when you were just really starting to think about it.
Back in school, which was, you know, some time ago, but so, you know, we always had the lunchroom thing. That was kind of like our platform where if you had any type of talent, whether you banged on the table, whether you beatboxed, whether you was an MC, so to be, that's where you would showcase yourself. That was the only environment for me. Like, I was never introduced to the studio until late. So in school, the schools I went to, the musical programs, they was little to none, I would say, at that point, like in New York City. You know, they cut back on a lot starting on, like, in the early 90s. We could only showcase at the table. So we went off the recognition of our friends telling us, or our friends kind of like urging us to rhyme more. So that's when you know you was kind of good if they wanted you to rhyme again. If they didn't want you to rhyme a second time, then it was kind of like, maybe you should try something else. So it was the competitiveness through my peers that kind of had me writing more, had me influenced to actually pursue music at that particular age, not knowing if I would be in the business or I would just be the lunchroom star, you know? Mm-hmm. That's my only grand experience, so to speak.
Got it. So it was basically, you weren't really thinking like, okay, I have a 5-year plan. It was more like, all right, I'm going to be in the lunchroom tomorrow, so I got to put something together that's really going to blow people's minds.
Exactly. We didn't write full rhymes. We wrote just like punchlines. So like one sentence that we knew that was going to get the crowd. So those were the pre-thought sentences that we put out there. And if you got a reaction, you knew that, all right, I'm going to come back tomorrow with something else. And until you was that guy in the lunchroom, which I might get a couple of cats that pop up after the interview, but like, wait.
But,
I was giving them, the business.
Yeah. Right on. Now, Grand Agent, your experience, tell me about, you're in this band in high school, but I'm sure it's a school band, so.
That first march, it wasn't even a marching band, actually. We marched once. It was more a concert band, so we would do, like, the Christmas concerts and stuff. But even that was, like, middle school. That wasn't even high school. By the time I got to high school, it was a similar state. I mean, we still had music class, but they weren't like handing out instruments and all that kind of stuff. I think they were doing like when my parents were in high school, public high school, and I grew up in Philadelphia. What did happen, which is similar, there was a lot of kids in school rhyming and would be little, ciphers here and there. And even though I had written stuff and I had been writing since I was 11 or 12, I never participated in any of that. I was like not sure about it. I was not confident in it. And I just observed, Some of the guys in the neighborhood where I went to school were actually pretty active, like making records. And these two guys had a group, and they're actually Pharrell's older cousins, and actually got him into making tracks and stuff. So like, it was around, but I just didn't feel confident. Mm-hmm. But what I did do is, after I graduated high school, I went to college for a while, and then I left, and then I went to another one, and then I left. Like, I just couldn't really get on any, like, course that I was satisfied with. And then eventually I went to an art school, the Art Institute of Philadelphia, and they had a, back then it was called, like, the music and video business. And, they had the huge studio at school, they had video cameras there. And I went in that studio the first time, and then I was just at home, and I knew everything started to click. I kind of stayed long enough to basically learn how to record, and so I did have some training there. And then I just took off and just started building a career from there, and that was 94, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about, either of you can answer, but the beginnings of when you feel like you really started, I'm starting to make a name for myself, I'm starting to like be established. Talk to me about that, either Tribeca or Grand Agent. What do you remember about that?
Okay, well, it's just right where I left off. I walked out of that studio and I walked into the beginning of this journey I'm still on. So what happened first was, I had that moment like, oh, wow. It was like we had to do a song for, a class project. And then from there, it was just like I was intrigued. So at that time, I was also working, I had a job as a custodial or something like that at the theater in Philadelphia. And I met a guy there who was maybe assistant artistic director. He and another guy that I went to school with, we formed a band, a group called Name, the rap group. From the very beginning, we just started tearing up the streets of Philadelphia. I mean, anywhere, everywhere we could get heard, we jumped on the stage. If it was a street corner, we did that. And we just kind of ran through the city for a good 3 years until we kind of peaked, which is kind of like a typical, I don't know what it's like these days, but in Philadelphia in those days, it was like by the third year, you were either going to get some kind of deal from the few labels that were there, or you were going to, leave town and go somewhere else and kind of continue. And that's pretty much what happened, except for me, I had to leave the group because we weren't all on the same page anymore. So that was like the next phase of me really getting the Grand Agent thing underway, because while I was in that group, I wasn't really Grand Agent until the very end of it. And that was also like me realizing they're not as passionate about having a career in the music business as I am, and you know, all of that kind of heartbreak and agony you got to go through. And then eventually I left and I went to LA, and you know, things started to click from there.
Okay. Yeah. So Tribeca, what about you? Fill us in.
Well, me, my story is a little bit different. All of my friends were about 3 years older than me. Just, you know, like neighborhoods were always separated by generations. Mm-hmm. Somehow I was just like a bigger kid. So I hung out with the older guys. Some friends of mine, they ended up getting a record deal via the guy named Ski Beats from Original Flavor, world-renowned producer Ski Beats. He actually started coming around our neighborhood, and he used to, like, I remember rhyming for him. A couple other people rhymed for him, but he only took interest into one guy, which is Geechee Swade of Camp Low. They end up getting a record deal. So, you know, it was just kind of a cool thing. We kind of all was in the studio together, just meshing and meshing until I kind of found my calling. Like, I was always an MC by choice, but the minute I was able to get musical equipment in front of me, for some reason, I just had, my interest was so grand that I learned it on the fly. I taught myself how to make beats, and I was able to sell those very first beats. So I kind of got into the music industry, and I knew it was really jumping off as a producer. I really didn't know after that point if I was ever going to rhyme again, but the passion to write, and like, sometimes when you make a instrumental, you kind of hear some other artists that may be able, you think might be able to fit this beat well. So I used to like write the choruses and hopes of trying to sell the entire song. But unfortunately, hip hop doesn't really work like that. So I just knew at that point, as a producer, that was my calling. But as years went on, I just transitioned back into an MC and kind of made both work for me.
Did you teach yourself like songwriting and producing? Wow.
Straight out the manual. I mean, we learned on the fly, so you know.
And like this is like when the interwebs were like little, like nothing, right? So you're like learning.
This is like 95, about 95, 96, when they signed with Profile. So now we're from a little 4-track recorder, and we're in this big studio trying to figure out. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Like, what does this do? You know, they like slapping our hands because we shouldn't be touching, but at that point, I'm there. I need to learn. I'm trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just worked out where I guess I was an easy, but I didn't really look for a manual. I was kind of hands-on. Let me try to see what this do. And once I figured that out, it was like the next step. And it worked out for me. I don't recommend it, though. They don't be touching people's equipment.
You're funny. Well, you know, it's interesting because listening to you guys, I mean, the common thread I'm hearing is like being super passionate and being willing to put in the hard work. Do either of you want to kind of expound on that?
Well, I'll just say that it is work. And it is, I mean, look, I've been pursuing the same goal since I walked out of that studio in 1994. And, you know, I've had glimpses and moments of what it looks like in my head, but I know for a fact the only reason I'm still going is because the full vision hasn't been realized. So it is work. It is trying. It is being resilient. But I don't look at it like any of that. You know, I just look at it as like, this is what's necessary for whatever this thing is that's driving me, you know. And I can say it's good. You know, Tribeca and I really just kind of recommitted to what we're doing last year in September, October. We had done a project together back in 2014 as well, and it wasn't quite as together as we are now. But I can just say I do see in him the same relentless commitment. And I just know for myself that it's nothing you can really put yourself up to. It's either like it's making you do it because the shit just got to happen. It just, for whatever reason, is just you're driven. And what I learned in leaving my first group was that you can't give that to yourself. It's like you come with that. You know, you might stumble around and have to find exactly what your niche is, but right. The passion is built in, you know, so I can't even really claim too much credit for that because I can't stop. I mean, that's really the truth of it. I just can't stop. And I've tried to stop, and I have stopped, but it don't leave me alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Tribeca, talk to me about this a little bit because I can think of people, and, you know, I was one of these people that has the yeah buts, right? Yeah, but I got a family to support. Yeah, but you don't know the debt I'm in. Yeah, but it'd be nice to work in the studio all day, but I got to pay rent. I'm just as passionate, but I've got so many obstacles. How would you speak to that?
The yeah, but is very, very, very true. I mean, again, I was the youngest in the crew. I absorbed a lot. I learned a lot, but I also, that passion that GA was talking about, it was within me. Like, I wasn't really with the waiting for, like, you know, they tell you all the time, you got to let it develop. Let it develop. I'm like, I got to help it develop. You know, like, I can't really wait for someone to make a decision for me. So I got to continue to find means to support myself, especially pre-children. You know, it was fine. But once you have a child, then it's like, can I do both? Mm-hmm. All those questions kind of arise. And to be honest, like, before we started doing this project wholeheartedly, I had three children. And I wasn't really working. Like, I didn't have a day job. And that's the difference now. I find it, and I commend all the artists that actually wake up in the morning, have to go to work, then have to figure out if they're going to get a day off for a show. These are all the things I'm dealing with now. But what I realized is that we have more supporters than we give ourselves credit for. You know, like, sometimes it's like, oh, it's hard because you feel like you're doing it by yourself, but the people around you, they're willing to support, but we don't necessarily seek their support all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to turn off and say, yeah, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to make this show. But you could actually do both, because there's individuals that have no talent. They're going to job after job, making it happen. So that's how I look at it today. You know, it's you're going to struggle, but there's a way to make everything work that's supposed to work.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So talk to me about, you know, how you guys met up and then, you know, how this project evolved. Yeah, Grand Agent, you want to throw in?
Yeah. We met in 2004. I came to LA and I got a record deal out there, and it led like one thing to another. And I ended up living in Germany for a while, and it was kind of like that was my moment where I was living it, you know, like I was touring regularly and, you know, I didn't need a job and everything was good. And then at the end of that, which was about a 2.5 year period, I came back and I did a tour first time in the States, like a full-fledged tour. And Tribeca was on the tour, and that's how we met.
Mm-hmm.
The tour was pretty crazy. You know, it started out really big, probably too many people, ran into some financial issues. It had to be pared down, and about half of the people went back home. And Tribeca and I were among the half that, you know, kind of stayed, basically because we were either the bigger artists or, you know, affiliated with the bigger artists. And just through that tour and, you know, all of the ups and downs of that, you know, we got to know each other a little bit. And then gradually over the years, you know, a song here, a song there. Eventually, like I said, by 2014, which was already 10 years later, we put a project together called Mega, the first Tribeca Grand release, the EP. And it was good. And then after that, we kind of kept working. And then we changed the formula a little bit because before, you know, I was doing all the vocals, Tribeca was doing the music. And then we did a song after the EP, I Go Hard. And that was the first time we both did vocals It changed the dynamic. I mean, obviously it would, but it changed it to the point where it kind of balanced the chemistry a little bit, and it started to sound more and more like a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And then from there, we did just more gradually songs here and there when we could. Lost touch for a while. And then last year, 2016 now, I ended up moving back east from L.A. After a while, we kind of picked up where we left off, and that eventually gradually evolved into the album we have coming out very soon. Yeah.
Sport of the Gods.
Yeah, it's okay. Called Sport of the Gods. Yeah.
Sport of the Gods. Now, yeah. Tribeca, were you guys living in the same area, or was this all remote, or it was like tell me
this,
about
this
that.
Was we have a funny GA created the moniker, the Wi-Fi Boys, because essentially that's what, I don't know if you heard NYPHI, but he explains it at the end, you need the key to get into the lock. It's a crazy explanation, but essentially it was really internet based. We really, I think when we was back in 2004, we was on tour, and that's probably the only time I was actually in a studio session with Randy. So it mm-hmm. kind of tells to our chemistry and how we think, where like sometimes I have a beat, I'll reference it with an idea that I have, and he'll send it back with his vocals, and I don't necessarily know if you could tell like who spearheaded the idea, because it's vice mm-hmm. versa. I'll send him up a bunch of beats and he'll reference it with a hook, but the chemistry, it meshes so well that you don't even know we're not in the studio. I mean, it's really not a secret, because I guess technology today allows that to happen with clarity, yeah. mixing, yeah. mastering. You really can't tell, other than if you maybe you got a musical ear, you could probably hear like a microphone difference, but generally our chemistry just works on an idea basis where, like, regardless of what he's thinking to a beat, I'm thinking we're somewhere along the same lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's almost like making cake, right? Because it's like when you eat cake, you're not like, this is, I'm eating the egg right now, I'm eating the flour right now. It's like you're eating completely.
That analogy works.
Yeah.
That's funny. It's true.
I want that to be your new tagline.
It's like cake.
Yeah. It's like...
That's funny.
So, well, let's talk about, you know, and I think that this is really cool too, because you guys met in 2004, and so I believe, and you can talk to me about this, you know, right or wrong, but I believe that there's been a crazy, crazy revolution in music from like early 2000s to now. You know, just with the rise of internet and Napster, and then, you know, Napster going away, and then downloading, and then now to streaming, and it's been a crazy time to be an artist. So if you can talk to me about that, either one of you, just about, you know, sort of navigating that from early 2000, you know.
Yeah. Well, I have a few things to say about that. My first album came out in 2001. And it did well for the space it was in. Probably sold 30,000 CDs, which is a low average of like where indie hip hop was at that time. Like starting from like the mid to late 90s, there was like a vinyl resurgence, and it was like a lot of activity. Ruffus Records and this one and that one. And so I kind of caught a nice wave, and I got in. And then, you know, I think the year after, 02, 03, it was the Napster and CDs plummet. And, you know, I came back home to America on my second album, or after 2003. It kind of tanked, and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff happened. And so eventually what happened in my case was, you know, I came back. I did that tour where we met. I did another one the year later. You know, and I was releasing stuff, and it was just, like, not going anywhere, and CDs were dying. And eventually, for me, you know, I had my son in that time, too, 04. So this was, like, the first time I had to think about getting a job and how I'm going to navigate life now, you know, let alone the music business. Mm-hmm. And so for me, That's when I entered the stage of really, I guess I would almost look at it now as saying, I don't want to say denying myself, but I was definitely not paying super duper attention to the career aspects of making the music. Like I worked at the airport for a while, loaded airplanes. I ended up being a truck driver at the end of the day. All while I was doing that, I was making songs, and I was going along with the changes, you know, putting stuff on iTunes and this, that, and nothing was going anywhere, you know. And then after a while, it became hard to book gigs, and like it all just felt like it was just all drying up. The way I navigated that was kind of put my attention on other things, which was raising my son, making sure we could pay the bills and stuff like that. And I just kind of put music in the back seat. I mean, the career aspect of it. I kept writing. I think I kept honing my craft. So, you know, that's kind of how I got through it. And now I feel like it's a bit of stability as far as we know. Okay, I don't see nothing superseding streaming for the time. I think, okay, we all understand this is how it is, and we understand. For me, like it always was, you know, the money is really going to be on the road, and then, you know, licensing, getting song placements, and really, which is most of the places I ever really made any money anyway. So in the full circle sense, not a whole lot has changed. It's just been the trauma of the floor falling out from underneath everyone, you know, and when we all woke up, it was like super proliferated with just thousands and hundreds of thousands of artists. So I think the truth now is just how do you set yourself apart, which again is not a new thing, but it just feels like a greater challenge with all access to all these things that used to be so esoteric. Now everybody has access to them. And, you know, I get that that's supposed to be a good thing, but it's tough when you know in your heart you're a true artist, and a lot of these people are not, you know, so it makes it challenging. I've been talking for a long time.
It's all good. All right. Come on. It's your turn, Tribeca. What do you think?
Well, I agree with a lot GA said on the basis of being an artist that came from vinyl and CDs and even cassette tapes at that point, you know, we've been through, we've seen everything go. So we've seen the vinyl kind of die down, except for like the purists that enjoy vinyl. I remember having like crates and crates of records in my house to make beats. And after a while, I'm not going to front, when it was time to download an MP3, though the quality wasn't the same, it was easier to say, I got to put these records into storage. The space, just the environment, like collecting dust. I was like, geez, it was a great thing to look at. But I definitely didn't see the turn coming where it would pretty much die out in that sense of the word, because we know vinyl. Like I remember my parents, like I said, they had a record player, they played vinyl. It's really not the same. It's only like purists that still have vinyl or collect vinyl. So in that sense, when Napster came about and people downloading, I didn't foresee it kind of blowing vinyl out the way. But I agree with GA in the sense of being an artist that's seen all that, and then the new artists that come into the game or new musicians that come into the game, they don't know about this pre-existing stuff. They just know, all right, let me go to CD Baby or TuneCore, right? And they get their stuff up on iTunes 8, pretty much.
Right.
That's like that's genius. If I'm an artist and I could go in, I got $500, I buy a studio kit, I could record where it sounds decent enough to put out. All I got to do now is go to TuneCore, CD Baby, got my joint digitally up, and I'm good to go. So being from the era previously from streaming, I could feel a little way like it's not a work hard generation when it comes to, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears and paying dues has always been a part of the music business. The people that have paid their dues properly, they've seen the supersede others in their careers. And I'm proud from that era, but, you know, it's also about adapting to what's new. So you know, with the social media, you got to play the game for success some form of way. So I'm not mad at it. It's just I wish it was easier to adapt to it, though. It's kind of difficult, you know, trying to get followers and being on the internet all day. Like, it's something you got to do. But I'm like, gee, I can't post anymore today. I feel like I'm doing too much.
Yeah. Well, and you're an artist. Like, you're not, you know, you didn't, when you were like, when I grew up, I want to be a social media manager. That wasn't, right?
Something, yeah, for real.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, this is a very common refrain. And, you know, the other thing I'm hearing about from my guests is, you know, it's interesting that there is a vacuum because you do have this older generation or people that still buy CDs. They still like to go to shows and they'll drop coin, you know, pretty significant coin for, you know, a good show, but they're not listening to Spotify, you know, they're not on Twitter. And so they don't know, you know, one of their favorite artists' album is dropping because it's like, they're just not. So how do you serve that segment of the population?
True.
That's what we're figuring out.
The one who figures that out gets the prize.
Yeah, that's what we've been figuring out. I mean, one of the ideas that I've been having for a while is like this concept of AC hip hop or like adult contemporary hip hop, where because I know for the people I grew up on and the people I grew up with, so like I'm in the music business, so I keep abreast of what's coming out. But you know, say like even Camp Low, guys that we're closely affiliated with, you know, they put out a record every year and a half, and the people that grew up with me listening to them, 9 times out of 10, they don't know about it, you know. So these artists that's making good music, you know, it's relevant, it's contemporary, but it kind of gets relegated to, you know, with this overarching umbrella of underground, where it's like,
right,
the sound is mature, it sounds good, it's radio friendly, it's radio ready, but there's not really a bona fide outlet for that. You know, like they'll play a guy from the 90s, they'll play his hit from the 90s, you know, but they won't, you know, maybe let him have a hit right now. And a lot of the music I'm hearing from these guys is good. It's good to go right now, but there just is not the proper platform for that yet. And whatever it is, it's going to have to incorporate, or it's going to have to work with the Spotify and the Apple Music, you know. And even myself, just recently, I finally, you know, started using Spotify. And, you know, it's amazing because it lets me keep up. It lets me give the younger artists a fair shake, you know, at least listen to the album once. If it's worth more than that, I'll listen again. If it's not, I know that I'm participating and active, you know, in the culture, whatever form or whatever it is. So that's kind of important to me. And that's why I said earlier, I think we probably landed on the paradigm for the next foreseeable future with the streaming subscription. I mean, it really makes music way cheaper than it should be. I mean, just based on what people even are spending to make music, it's still kind of a rip for the artist. But I think at least we know now, okay, this is where it's going to be. This is the business model. And then, you know, we can kind of work with that knowing that that's what it is, you know. So I at least feel optimistic about that. I feel like it's stable for the time being, you know.
But I think, you know, you guys are still, I think, thinking outside the box, though. And you know, with your recent projects and, you know, Take a Knee, that type of thing. Do you want to talk about that, Tribeca, just about how you guys are kind of getting outside of the sort of very narrow playing field?
Yeah, I think we creatively, we're doing what we want to do. And I think that's what keeps us creative and sounding a little bit different from the norm, because ultimately I'm making music that I would like to hear in hopes of finding a million or 10 million people that want to hear the same thing. That's always been my goal, and my approach to music is I make what I like, what I could vibe out to. It's always, I guess you're your first real critic, you know? So it's like, if I could listen to something over and over, my target audience are human beings like myself. Hopefully I could reach them and they could see what we're into. But our approach had always been, and I think I could speak to GA when I say that, it's music we actually would listen to versus, mm-hmm. you know, as a musician yourself, I'm sure, like, sometimes you play something, you're like, I don't know about this one. Or this one is, you play it over and over. You know when you come out the studio and the next morning you listen to a song, and last night, I didn't really love it, but today, this is my joint. This is exactly how I'm feeling right now, and that's my approach, always just trying to find that balance of what I like or what I may want to experience with. And it's been working. It's been working for me. Like, I love our album. It's incredible. I believe every song is going to take you to a point in your life, whether you was in a club, whether you was going through something, whether you are feeling inspired, it's going to take you to a different point in your life, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead. Yeah, and I was just going to say I agree. I wanted to say something else, but it kind of slipped my mind while I was listening. But that is the essence of it. You make what you want to hear, and you find the people who want to hear that too. I mean, there is really, in my mind, there's no other way to do it. You know, I wouldn't really know how to do it any other way. And I've had opportunities to do things which would, I guess, on the face of it, be considered a quote unquote selling out. I never really bought into that too much, but like even when I lived in LA, for example, I fell into some, just writing little songs for, you know, for music libraries and stuff. You know, but I always found a way to make it me and to put myself in there. Even if the track wasn't a track I would have chosen, you know, and it taught me how to work sometimes within the framework that kind of put before you and that you really can't get around, you know. And so I learned a lot that way, too. And it's important, I think, to be able to work within the parameters of what's available. You know, I mean, you need to fit in to a degree, so you need to be mindful of the trends. But you can always sprinkle the trends or whatever is going on at the time into your own thing and still have your own unique thing. And I think, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. We really hit on something special, and people are responding to it. So that's the ultimate affirmation right there, or confirmation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what I was thinking of too, though, is again, that taking it outside of the, listen to my mixtape. Right. Like, you took it out of that, like the take a knee challenge. You know what I mean? Like,
that's stuff really like that. Huge. Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? That you're touching upon, you know, I think a really critical issue that's going on right now in our country, you know, and that was sincere and inspired, you know.
So, I think with stuff like that, it's about, for me, I think stuff like that, how we present it, is ultimately, you want to be yourself in the biggest conversation you can be in, right? So it's like, Take a Knee came about real casually, the song. The Take a Knee Challenge was obviously more thought out and more calculated. And, you know, to be honest, it didn't go off as well as we thought it would. But I think the effort in itself really kind of characterized, for me, what it means to be like a hip-hop artist. It's like, you know, I kind of stick to the traditional creed of it, which is, you know, peace, unity, love, having fun, like if you want to go all the way back to the beginning. And me, I just try to find ways to do that today, you know, because, like you said, listen to my mixtape. I mean, it's hard for me, and I think it would be hard for me not to try to put some kind of voice out there, because if I didn't do it, I would just have to complain about what I see as the shortcomings of the way people have commodified it. So I just want to participate, you know, actively in keeping it the way I fell in love with it, you know. So
that's real.
you know, that probably appears out of the box now because the box is the box, you know. But before, we didn't have a box, you know. We were just all free agents trying to outdo each other creatively. Now it's more about, can you outdo each other materially, you know? But we used to try to raise the bar from a creative standpoint. And I think that's what we do that probably seems novel now because the other shit has become so expected. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I gotta wrap things up. And okay. I don't want to, but I have to.
Okay.
Tribeca, why don't you just close this out? Tell us what's coming down the pipe for you guys.
Well, things have been moving quickly since, I want to say, October 2017. Mm-hmm. A lot's been going on. We released Take a Knee on NYPHI. The album, I'm proud to announce, is finished, mixed, mastered, covered, artwork, CDs to go out to radio. Everything is being prepped in its final stages. So you could expect, like, maybe between late spring, early summer, Order to Gods, Tribeca Grand. It's a beautiful album. I'm really proud. I really think the people, especially the people we're trying to get to, the adult contemporary hip-hop fans, they're really going to enjoy it, and it's going to take them back to a place or take them to a place that has meaning to them. It's conceptual. You heard Take a Knee. So Take a Knee was, NYPHI is a bit fun, so you can expect that balance of emotion all through the album.
Right.
Yeah, I want to hit him with the social media stuff.
Yeah, of course. The website is sportofthegods.net. Also, we did just put out a mixtape, so listen to our mixtape.
Okay.
we put out a mixtape to kind of hold people over while we finished up the details of the album. So if you go to sportofthegods.net, you can get that. And we're on all social media at sportofthegods. The big ones are Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook for us. We're not too big on Snapchat yet, but if you're on Snapchat, we're on there, Sport of the Guys, too. And I guess eventually we'll get up to speed on that. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But we're on there.
I'm clueless. I have a Snapchat thing, and I think I tried it twice. I was like, wait, do I hold the button down? What do I do? Like, I felt stupid. Yeah. I was like, no, this is not for me. I can't handle it. You guys have been amazing. I can't tell you how grateful I am. I know you guys got a lot going on. So to take the time to be on the show and to educate people and inspire people. And I really do think that, you know, it's like you never know what your story and your wisdom is going to, how it's going to touch somebody else's life. So I just really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, for sure.
My special thanks again to Grand Agent and Tribeca of the group Tribeca Grand. And again, you can find them at sportofthegods.net or on social media at Sport of the Gods on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and yes, sometimes even Snapchat. And don't forget that their album is dropping this month on April 17th, so make sure you get it in your hot little hands. We are musicjobspodcast.com, and I am your erstwhile host, L. Ariel. You can find me and my musical musings at lariel.com. That's lariel.com. I am also on social media and YouTube. Just look for l.ariel. And again, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week. And you must keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you dare give up.